Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're chatting with Craig Hemke, founder and editor of TFMetalsReport.com. Since we're chatting with you, Craig, we are going to be talking about the precious metals and commodities sector broadly, but also because it's been a good week for commodities really across the board, and even more noteworthy for the precious metals investors. Yesterday was a good day for gold and silver, and even the day before yesterday, Tuesday, was a good day for silver. And on the back of all that, also the stocks have been moving higher. A lot of people have been wondering, though, what's causing the move this week in commodities and precious metals? Some people will sit back and say, well, it was due for it. The market was so sold out that, look, the metals are finally, investors are finally starting to wake up to the fact that metals are so undervalued. I find that to maybe not encompass the real reasons why some of these commodities are moving, because I think it usually does take some driver to drive these type of moves, especially when you see a move that broadly pushing commodities across the board higher. You shared one chart with us here that is the China credit impulse. I'll post this chart below. You've also outlined how gold and silver have moved when this chart has bottomed. So it bottomed in February 2020, June 2015, April 2012, and late 2008. Craig, start off by explaining first and foremost what the China credit impulse is measuring here on this chart, please.
Well, hi, Corey, and hi, Shad. It's mainly, I just consider it a measure of whether China is loosening or tightening monetary policy. You know, kind of like, you know, people look at Fed funds and say, well, if Fed funds are going up, then the Fed is tightening, you know, that sort of thing. So just kind of use it as a measure as to whether which direction China is going. And China, I think everybody knows, is the world's largest consumer of just about everything, right? So it would follow that if China is loosening monetary policy and putting more yuan out into the world, and that commodities would then go up as this credit impulse goes higher, that commodities would go up because maybe, you know, they're just out there buying everything as this world's largest consumer. But then also if China's tightening and trying to draw in their monetary supply or whatever, and that credit impulse is falling, well, that can be kind of a tougher period for commodities. So this is just something that I first got my eye about a year ago. I saw some stories on Zero Hedge about, you know, China and measuring their monetary policy by this credit impulse, that this credit impulse had peaked in an area where it usually peaks and was starting to head down. And I went, I'm sure that won't impact the precious metals because the fundamentals are so sound and all that kind of stuff. Well, look, hell's bells. Look what happened last year. And individual commodities had their fun times, you know, where crude oil rallied and copper rallied and the base metals rallied and that sort of thing. But there wasn't like a general trend higher in the commodities until maybe late in 2021. Okay, so there was about in December then last year, and I'm starting to kind of collect my thoughts for my annual forecast, trying to come up, you know, with something coherent. And I saw another article in Zero Hedge said it looked like this Chinese credit impulse had bottomed and was turning higher. And they put on this chart, and it's the chart that I sent to you that I've since marked up with some red arrows, and said this is usually the area that the credit impulse turns. And so I thought, okay, well, gee, if that was a headwind last year, not only for the precious metals, but for all commodities, then maybe it'll be a tailwind this year. And that's something I should put in my annual forecast. And I did. And that screenshot I shared with you is a snippet of my annual forecast because, it, you know, in those arrows and those periods when the credit impulse was rising, meaning China was loosening, and all commodities in general were rising, gold and silver did particularly well. And so maybe we're entering, you know, I thought, well, I got to factor that into, you know, what might happen in 2022 if that's going to be the case. And then, okay, so now here we are, had a really lousy first week of the year in the precious metals. It's two really bad days, Monday and Wednesday, that first week of the year, but we've done okay since. And we had this three-day U.S. market holiday weekend, last weekend. And on early Monday morning, China time, so Sunday night here in the U.S. and Canada, here came this news flash that China had actually cut one of their key rates. I mean, not much, like 10 basis points or something, but at a time when the Fed, you know, and everybody else, oh, yeah, we're going to hike, and Jamie Dimon says we're going to hike 27 times actually this year, that sort of thing. Here's China on their own initiative going the other direction. And I thought, well, wait a second, maybe that's reflective of this credit impulse now turning higher as expected. And so then lo and behold, what have we seen here in the 3 days this week? Silver's up $1.75. Gold's not doing quite as well just because a huge sell-off in the bond market this week. But it's not just the precious metals, man. Platinum, palladium, crude oil, go down the list, the copper, all the industrial metals, even the grains are all just soaring. We're recording this on Thursday. This is a third day in a row that my entire commodity board that I monitor is almost entirely green. These huge moves. So it's not just the precious metals are rallying because they're oversold and all this kind of stuff. They are rallying as a part of the entire sector, it seems. And I'm just wondering if part of that rationale for it moving is, you know, this move by China. And again, one last thing, you know, typically we look at dollar priced commodities. And if the dollar is going up and getting stronger, then commodities go down. I mean, think of like 2014 is just a terrible example of that. But the dollar's up this week. Dollar's up almost a full point from where it was a week ago when it got all the way down to 94.65. And yet look what's happened. So I'm not going to sit here and try to say, look, so all these dots connect perfectly. But there is a potential here for a bigger picture that I think people have missed so far this week. And if it is the part of the bigger picture, and if China is going to be easing this year, then, you know, we might be in for a little better year in the precious metals than many were expecting.
Well, Craig, you bring up a couple interesting points there, and it is interesting to see the commodities run when there is dollar strength. It is counterintuitive. And this factor of China being in an easing pattern when the rest of the central banks are actually in a tightening pattern is a divergence that their central bank is going through. And we had talked off mic that they had sent out an official request to the EU and to the Fed to not hike too aggressively. So they clearly are in a different pattern than the rest of the market. And it's possible since as goes China, so goes the commodities market, that that's playing into it. But let me just ask, I don't think it just has to be an oversold bounce. Could there also be, you know, US participants that are expecting that with this Fed rate hiking cycle starting up very shortly, probably in 2 months, that maybe inflation is more of a problem than they were expecting. And when you see energy running like it is, oil running, it usually leads the commodities higher. Could it just be that the commodity sector is also tracking the move in oil and tracking these expectations of higher inflation?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, absolutely. And supply chain disruptions. You know, you got to lock in a price. You got to find some supply perhaps from wherever you can get it. I'm sure you guys have noticed. I mean, it's a little odd. It's not maybe that noteworthy, but the deliveries for January gold off the COMEX are higher than I've ever seen before, ever. I mean, it's a non-delivery month. Past Januaries of the last couple of years have been well under 2,000 contracts, a lot of times under 1,000 total. And this month we're already over 5,000. There were some reports back on Tuesday and Wednesday about, you know, due to the energy crisis in Europe, several major refineries and smelters and places like that have been shutting down. And that all of a sudden, you know, there's a fear for, you know, immediate delivery of silver, things like that. So there's a number of things that could be factoring in, no doubt about it. Like, I guess what I'm saying again is it's like, well, you guys know this. I mean, if you're going to be a gold bug, like, you know, I've dedicated my life to being for the last dozen years, and it's a pretty complicated picture you got to try to sift through, you know. What determines the price is not just, you know, a dot on a screen. There's always a lot going on, and you find out, you know, the more you learn, the less you know, it seems, in managing all this. So you just try to keep track of as much information as you can, try to connect it all with some level of hard-earned experience, and then try to see your way forward. And like I said, if we are, you know, with everybody and their brother entering 2022 talking about rate hikes, you know, and monetary policy, you know, and drawing down the money supply and all this stuff, which, I mean, I don't think is going to happen anyway, but with that being generally the sentiment that has taken hold, you know, the transitory stuff, I guess it shouldn't surprise anybody if things end up going the other direction. If things go the other direction, that's going to have a pretty major impact on the markets that we follow.
Hey, Craig, you are right that it's a complicated world, and that is shown by actually driving the whole way down into China's credit, right? And that's where we are now at as a reason for maybe why the metals started moving. Let's also talk about something that some people don't pay attention to, and that is the COT report. So the commitment of traders reports, We actually haven't covered those in a while, but the comments we've been getting a lot of regarding at least the precious metals sector is that we didn't have a strong short position or a strong long position. It showed that sentiment was pretty washed out, but I think the COT reports was also showing too that there wasn't a heavy bet on, say, either side. What are you seeing in the COT reports?
Yeah, that would be a good way to put it. Kind of neutral. You know, a lot of times if you track these things long enough, you get a feel for when it looks a little heavy, meaning like the large speculator category, the managed money, gets excessively long. And you think, well, okay, if they've done all their buying and there's nobody left to buy, that means you're going to have more sellers than buyers going forward. And typically then that resets. And so where we are now, though, currently, particularly in silver, is pretty neutral, actually even kind of bullish, kind of the speculators are not very long. And then the other thing you factor in, if you really want to drill down in these reports, and I would not urge anyone to do it because it's mad. I mean, I don't put that much. I mean, there are some people that make their career out of reading this COT reports. And I mean, look, banks have been fined, caught several times, deliberately misrepresenting their positions and sending them in, you know. And I, so I'm, you know, look, it's a, it, and the information by the time you get it is 74 hours old. You know, they survey at the close of the COMEX on Tuesdays. And then, oh, God, no, we can't turn that out in a couple hours. It's like the FOMC minutes. No, no, we got to have three full freaking days. And if there's a holiday, oh, God forbid. No, 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 no. We're going to go all the way to Monday and make it 6 days old. So nobody can use a COT report and say it's some kind of trading tool. Okay, so, but you can look at it. And you do this long enough, then there are certain, you know, little things you might draw your attention to. And one of them is you break down the report into subcategories. And one of the subcategories is defined as swap dealers. Okay. Well, what's a swap? It's a derivative. Okay. Well, like what? Like futures contracts and options. Oh, okay. So who deals? Who are the dealers of futures contracts and options? Well, they're the big bank trading desk. Okay. Well, all right. So let's see what they're doing. And typically, as most folks know, they spend a lot of time on the short side, and particularly in silver, where, you know, a handful of these banks have kind of a dominant market position. We know, I noticed on my side, for the back in about the early part of November, late October last year, that the swap dealing banks on that report were actually slightly net long. Well, that didn't happen very often. I mean, I remember the last time it happened, maybe it was 2018, before that, like 2005 or something. I mean, it rarely happens, but here they were. I mean, like a couple thousand contracts. Of course, then price then takes off and rallies, goes all the way to 2550. And by the time we get up to 2550, those swap dealing banks are back to like net short 21,000 contracts. Price then falls back down. Well, as of last week's report that was surveyed on the, what would that be, the 11th, those swap dealing banks were, again, just barely net long, like 180 contracts or something. And that's usually a sign that, you know, downside's probably limited, but maybe you got some room for price to run up. And that's exactly what we've seen in the time since. So it's just another one of those things. You know, it's not a be all end all. And I was, again, I probably don't want to spend a whole lot of time, you know, looking into it every week. Leave that up to, you know, people like me that have nothing better to do. But it was certainly something that seemed to be on our side as recently as last week.
Well, Craig, you brought up silver there, and you also provided us a chart that ties into that, what you were seeing on the COT report, and that was there's a moving average that it keeps bumping its head up against the 200-day simple moving average, and it has come back down and gone back up to test that again. So are we at a point where you think it's a make it or break it moment where we could actually finally break above that 200-day moving average, get some momentum going in silver, or possibly get rejected back down again?
Dude, it sure would be nice, wouldn't it? Like I said, we're up $1.75 or something on the three-day week thus far as we record this, Tuesday through Thursday. So silver's probably a little overbought short term, probably due to consolidate and pull back. But man, if it can get above and close above its 200-day moving average, that'll be the first time since July 16th. And this is 6 months ago. So it's been below that 200-day for a long time. And I don't know, maybe you can include this chart with the post as well. I put some circles on the last couple times it tried to get above it, and it quickly reversed and fell backward. I mean, like significantly backward both times after that. And I mentioned those swap dealing banks and adding shorts in the rally. Well, you can see that on this chart as well. In fact, between COT reports in November, that the swap dealing bank net short position went from net short 10,000 contracts to net short 21,000 contracts during that period of time where I've circled there, where price was trying to get through its 200-day moving average. So I don't think they're back that heavily net short again. But again, until price gets through that level, you can certainly see, you know, a downtrend continuing. You know, like, oh, here we are again, all excited, just like we were 2 months ago. And then they pull, you know, the rug gets pulled out from under us and down we go. So I would, you know, it's been 6 months. We're right here again as we speak for the front month, March 22 contract. The 200-day moving average is 24.76. It's coming down a little bit every day. So maybe tomorrow on Friday, it'll be 24.74. Your high today, check this out, 24.758. So basically 24.76. And as we speak on the Globex session Thursday afternoon, we're back to 24.63. So that's going to be a, you know, a real short-term level people want to watch to see if we can get above there.
Thing is, there's a lot of short-term levels to be watching for both the precious metals, gold and silver, right? Because there is still a lot of upside work to do. And let's remember, gold is 1840. It's not like we haven't talked about 1840 over the last year and a half, right? So there still needs to be that move higher. Craig, when you're balancing out a couple other factors here, one being U.S. equity markets that have shown a little bit more shakiness. And on the complete flip side of that, but I have been hearing comments about this, that the Russia-Ukraine tensions, this geopolitical risk could also be driving gold and silver, but I think more gold so than silver. What's your thoughts? Do either of these play a role in this recent move higher?
I'm sure that's part of the, you know, underlying stuff. And again, but and gold still on the week is only up $20 maybe. So I mean, that's 1%, which is fine. I'd go up 1% every week. That'd be fine. But there are other things that are always going to be bubbling below the surface. But there's, you know, as we look ahead, we've got COMEX options expirations next week. We've got the February contract going off the board on the 28th. You know, so everybody's rolling out of February's into April's and June's. That's usually a pretty volatile period. And we got the FOMC next week as well. I mean, everybody's talking about the March meeting being a time when the Fed's going to first put on a rate hike. And even people this week going, hey, they don't even do two rate hikes, you know, that sort of thing. Well, I mean, geez, we got to be aware of at least the possibility that the Fed's going to give us a rate hike next week, right? I mean, if they're talking about doing two, but they don't want to do two because it might upset the stock market, well, maybe they'll give us one next Wednesday. Well, that would catch a lot of people by surprise. Might keep this downtrend. You know, the next time silver falls back from the 200 day, that would probably do it. So there's a lot going on. The only other thing I would point out, you talk about being at these levels before, Corey, and I think this is important for people to remember. The longer, you know, because everybody looks at the same charts and remembers the same prices, the longer you're in a consolidation like this, then the more people then sit up and take notice when the consolidation finally ends and you move higher. You know, it's like silver was between 14 and 18 for like 5 years and certainly below 22. Well, once we got into the 20s back in 2020 and then got above 22, I mean, it went to 29 in like a matter of days because everybody went, oh man, look, it broke out. I mean, everybody saw it. It's the same thing with gold. You know, the old all-time high was 1920, and we went up there, and it was like, okay, well, let's see what happens. Boom! And I mean, put on another 10% in, again, a matter of days, maybe a couple of weeks. So we watch these levels. Yeah, gold's up nice, but it's got to get above 1880 and then above 1920. But boy, if when it does, everybody's going to see it, and everybody's going to get excited, and it's going to move, you know, relatively quickly, at least for a while. And silver's the same way. So there's some advantage, doesn't feel like an advantage, certainly any fun, but there are some long-term advantages to basing and consolidating for a long period of time.
Absolutely, Craig. The bigger the base, the bigger the space. So a lot of times when there's so much attention on how long something has corrected, it does, like you're saying, provide more eyeballs. We saw that happen with copper when it finally broke out last year. We saw that happen in uranium. So those are two other examples of where everybody was watching it. it finally breaks to the upside and everybody's on board. Let me just ask you one other question, though, and that is, when we saw some of these moves to this 1840 level in the past, in the recent past in gold, it was really just gold moving up there and silver was kind of languishing and the mining stocks were selling off even as gold made those highs. This time, we actually saw silver the last few days outperforming gold, and we saw the senior miners outperforming the metals, and we saw the junior miners outperforming the seniors. So that kind of a batting order is generally a little bit different than what we've been seeing. Does that give you a little more encouragement?
Yeah, I suppose. We put that right there in a column with all the rest of the commodities that are performing. Yeah, that's different. And it, again, maybe one of those things, Shad, where after a while, everybody that's going to sell has sold. I mean, it's like, okay, I gave up on these things, blew out some of my miners in tax loss selling season. You know, I mean, at some point, you just end up with more buyers than sellers. And that can bleed over and certainly affect everything. So you're right to point that out, too. And again, I'm not trying to like blow sunshine here. This is going to be a wildly unpredictable year, not just economically, but politically and societally, really. And so anybody that tries to tell you they know exactly what's going to happen is probably selling something. All we can do is look at all these underlying things like that Chinese credit impulse and then just try to plan accordingly and see if it works out. And so far, so good.
So far, so good, at least this week. But I guess you are right. I didn't take the big picture in the sense that gold is up about $20 this week. But hey, it is over some key moving averages. So we will just continue to follow up with these moves. And hopefully the uptrend continues for all those precious metals investors. One thing to consider, too, is we did see higher volumes broadly in the last couple days. So, Craig, this does actually follow in with your 2022 macro cast that we touched on last segment. We will also post another link to that below so everyone can read over what is one of your bigger pieces of the year, forecasting your thoughts for this year. Craig, thanks for chatting with us. We'll chat again next week, hopefully with the same positivity around the precious metals. Have a great rest of your week, Craig.
All right. Thanks, guys.